expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX. Brought to you by Memorial Health System. You have questions about your health, and Memorial Health System has the answers. Our phone lines are open at 753-1240. That's 753-1240. Now, ask the expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX.
Welcome back to another week of Ask the Expert. I am your host, Ray Lytle. I am most certainly not an expert, but I do have an expert with me. Her name is Dr. Virginia Dolan, a pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Cocomel, and with the Memorial Center for Healthy Families. We love the Memorial Center for Healthy Families. That whole concept's good. Today we're going to talk about the four habits to raise healthy kids. Now, sometimes on Ask the Expert, we break it down we'll come up with a number. We'll come up with the top 10 healthy eating. Top four habits to raise healthy kids. So I want everyone to keep your notes. And remember, these are always great episodes when we do this. Hello, Dr. Dolan. It is fantastic to have you here today.
Thank you so much. I'm tickled to be here.
We are going to talk about those habits to raise healthy kids. Every parent out there, really, all of us, we're all worried that we're doing it wrong. Wouldn't you say?
I think that as a parent, I would say I would agree that it is a tough job. It is a little bit of a scary job. And it takes a lot of self-confidence and self-reflection to do a good job.
And we just, a lot of times we just want to do it right. At all costs, you want to do it right to make sure you're raising your kids the right way. And this is something I want you guys to take to heart what we're going to talk about today. What is the first habit? What's the first thing that we worry about when it comes to habits to raising healthy kids?
I think ground zero is sleep. Okay. As a physician, a pediatrician, I've practiced for over 25 years, that if we can't get sleep right, we can patch other things, but they're never totally better. Sleep is ground zero for wellness.
Is that meaning that we need to make sure they get enough?
It's enough sleep in hours, but it's also the restfulness of the sleep.
Right.
We know that children who are lacking enough sleep will be sick more often. It lowers our immunity, so you're more likely to get infections. I think if any of us think about this in our regular lives, that makes sense to us. We know when we've been under stress and not slept well, we're more likely to get an illness, whether it's a cold or more serious than that. We know that emotional well-being, I mean, if you think about yourself and you've lacked a night of sleep, who's not more irritable?
Yeah.
In kids, we see it affects their school grades. When someone comes in and they said their grades are falling, it's one of the first questions we have, because if you're tired, then it's hard to think or function well during the day.
Your focus is limited.
Yeah, a study showed actually that if you went with just one less hour sleep a night than you're typical for 2 weeks, you have all the symptoms of someone with ADD.
Wow.
Attention deficit disorder. So it definitely affects our functioning, even with small changes. We know that people who do without sleep are a little more impulsive. So you talk about teens who are a little more risk-taking. And there's a definite strong correlation with how we manage our weight and how we sleep.
I did morning radio for many, many years. And you can tell by my weight that 3.5 hours a night of sleep is really... If you saw a picture of me before I started doing mornings and after I did mornings,
that's
3.5 hours of sleep is not a good idea, people.
Yeah, that's a problem with shift work of all kinds.
Yeah, because it does. It your weight is, and you don't even realize it when it's happening.
No. And long-term, lack of sleep we know goes with hypertension or high blood pressure problems as adults, heart attacks, and stroke.
What do we do? And there are some cases, though, where our kids... And I remember this in my teen years, and we'll get back to younger in a bit. But in my teen years, you know, I was playing sports. There was a time I remember playing basketball, and we'd practice till a certain time. And then I was also in school musical. So I had, as soon as basketball practice was over, I had to go there and do the musical practice. And then after that, I had to run home and try to get all studying in before I go to sleep and then go to school the next day. And I do remember that as being... for several years, that being a really big issue in my life of, oh my God, you know, I'm just, when am I sleep? When do I get to sleep? And it did affect, I didn't realize it at the time, but it did affect a lot of things when I was in high school. What do we do in that? I mean, what do we teach? What are we not teaching our children?
Well, I think, as you say, this is not a new generation issue. It's forever. And I think we can all go back to periods of our lives when we know we went. And I think the key is to use those as learning curves to see, to make the connection that it was the lack of sleep and this is what it led to. And there are times in our lives where we're going to, for whatever reason, life happens and we're going to have less sleep. But trying to make it a priority the vast majority of the time is very helpful. So we talk about kids who are very young, of course, sleep a lot more. You know, at 2 months, we're really happy if they go 6 hours straight.
Right.
Then, they, of course, they sleep a total of almost 20. But 4 months to and older, we look for 10 hours to 12 hours straight. So that unfractured sleep, that sleep where you're not waking up in the middle of it, is as important. It's very important, as well as total sleep.
So a lot of parents think that 7-8 hours is good. But for kids, you're talking 10 to 12. They need 10 to 12 hours of sleep.
10 to 12. And then when you get into older, maybe 9 to 11. But it is variable. Some people say, you know, I don't need that much sleep. And there's been a lot of studies. There are a small number of people who don't need as much and a small number of people who need more than average. But most people, most young people, need 9 to 11 hours by the time they're in kindergarten. And then you try, if they say they don't need as much, then my question is always to them and to their family, how rested are they in the morning? If you can say, I wake up and I'm rested and I have energy through the day, there's no argument, then you're getting enough sleep.
So, and that, we start that around, what, when in preteen years or teen years? And
I think as far as asking
them determine
that,
it?
Well, yes, I think it's a moving dial. So, like everything in parenting, that when they're younger, you help decide a lot more for them, and then you slowly kind of trade off and help them try to make the connect the dots. Because if it's you saying you need more sleep, that's a starting place. But then you have to help them discover that they need more sleep. And so they connect the dots themselves. Then they're truly learning it. Then you don't have to make it happen. Then they want it to happen because they want to feel better.
What are we as parents doing wrong that prevents them? Or let me word this. What can parents do to help their children get a really good night's sleep? How do we go about that?
I think early on, having a bedtime calming routine. It doesn't have to last for hours, just 5 or 10 minutes that we, by example, which is a big issue for a lot of us as parents, that we show that we have a self-calming bedtime routine, that there's something we do 5 or 10 minutes that settles us down. It can be very individual. I also think, though, as parents, not having a TV or other screens in the bedroom is huge. And everybody wants to spoil them with a TV in the bedroom. But if you can keep away from that, it can save you a lot of issues. And now, in the day of so many digital screens that are small, the blue light that comes off of iPads and iPhones and other screens like that that make it so bright and easy to read also causes actually a chemical reaction from our eye to our brain that puts us in a more alert state.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah. So for 90 minutes, an hour and a half before bed, it's really important to avoid that blue light coming off of those kinds of screens.
And what age do we look at starting to form those habits?
Oh, from the very beginning. I think two months on.
I'm remembering my daughter being very, very young. She got a routine down for sleep. And we did this, I'm telling you, Dr. Dolan, we did this every single night. It was.
Well, consistency.
Lay on Daddy. Yeah. She'd have to have this show on. I can even tell you that the name of the show was Dragon Tales. And it was on the PBS stations. And so she'd have to watch Dragon Tales, all right? And then while laying on me, and she'd fall asleep during it every single night. And then my wife would pick her up, take her off of me, pick her up, take her to the bedroom. And my daughter would roll over and say, all right, now it's my story. And then every night my wife would like tell her the same story, read her the same story. And she would fall asleep while the story was going on. And then my wife would wait and then walk out of the room and she'd sleep all night. I mean, this was several years of this until she finally stopped doing it. But I mean, that routine seemed to calm her.
Yes.
And get her set up, get her ready to sleep.
Yeah, I think telling a story, especially with their eyes closed, so they're kind of eyes closed and visualizing it. Books are great. I love reading the books and sharing books. But doing that early and then going to their eyes closed and they listen to a story and they're visualizing it, and it's, if it's a, especially a pleasant story, it makes a difference in the quality of our sleep and our dreams.
What about this question? When we get to preteen and teenage years. Is there such a thing as getting too much?
It's a good question.
Because I fear this with my daughter now.
I don't know that there's too much, but what I would say is if someone's saying they're sleeping all the time, it's worth visiting with your physician about to see if there's anything else going on. Sometimes it's just maybe they just finished, like you said, the basketball season and the play, and you just kind of have to chill and get your energy back and have that downtime. And maybe it can be a sign of depression. It can be a sign of drug use or other issues. Luckily, most of the time, that's not it.
My 14-year-old daughter, since school ended, she's like, oh, I just want to sleep. And she will sleep for like 12 hours, and she's 14. And, I mean, it is. And I always say, she's getting too much sleep. My wife, she's not sleeping that whole time. I'm like, I don't know. She seems to be getting like, is there such a thing as too much, or is it she's tired, she's sleeping, and she's productive when she's awake?
That sounds okay. I think the range for kids who are school age to teen being within normal with the new guidelines from the Sleep Foundation is 8 to 12 hours. So 12 hours is still beyond the outside.
So it's not that bad for a 14-year-old.
No. I think the key is if they wake up rested and they go and their energy is normal the rest of the day, I wouldn't think too much more about it.
All right. So that is sleep, which is our number one habit. We're going to take a break, come back with number two. We're giving you the four habits to raise healthy kids. My expert today, Dr. Virginia Dolan, pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Cocomill. We'll be back with more Ask the Expert in just a moment.
Welcome back to Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX. Brought to you by Memorial Health System. Our phone lines are open at 753-1240. That's 753-1240. Now, Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX.
We are back with Ask the Expert on WTAX. I'm your host, Ray Lytle. My expert this week, Dr. Virginia Dolan. We're talking about the four habits to raise healthy kids. Number one was sleep. All right, let's get to number two.
Number two is eating patterns. A lot of times we talk a lot about what we eat, but it's also just the pattern of our eating habits that is really important.
By pattern, you mean the time or when? What do you mean? Like, give me a good eating pattern example.
Well, as far as talking about children, I think the pattern is to an extent following the child. You know, as a newborn, we are born knowing how much we need to eat. I mean, that's why breastfeeding works. You don't know how much they got if they nurse directly.
Right.
You just feed them.
Until they're no longer hungry.
That's right. Because when they're born, they're not like me. They don't eat because it's lunch, because it smells good, because they're under stress. They only eat because their body says they need to eat.
I eat because I'm watching TV and somebody's eating on TV, so it makes me want to eat.
Yeah, there's a lot of other reasons we learn to eat, but yes.
Yeah.
So they eat for the right reasons. And then after they're one, then it's as parents, we often talk about, and I think it's been on this show before, the division of responsibilities with food and parents.
Yeah.
And that I think that is so crucial and something we can't remind ourselves of enough, that when in these four jobs, that as parents, we worry about what they eat or what's around the house, when they eat and where they eat. But kids are always, and we are always in charge of our own how much to eat, if any. And kids, especially at younger age, are notoriously known for sometimes choosing not to eat anything. And to be okay with that as a parent, because that's not our job. And we know that if you do that, you reduce your children's chances of obesity and anorexia, the two extremes,
right,
by letting them be in charge of how much, except dessert, of course.
I think that then this is just me. This is not our expert. But I think some parents would rather, like, their kids, like, don't want to eat. Some of them are like, oh, good. Because I think society does put you don't want your kid to grow up and be obese because it's such a negative or it's viewed so negatively by society. And I think that some of the parents are okay when their kids aren't eating. But you mentioned that there's another extreme there. Mm-hmm. When our kids aren't eating, it isn't necessarily a good thing.
Right. I think it's trying to let go of thinking of that as our job. And I think the whole obesity thing has gone from, like, not recognizing it to being hyper aware, like you said, just overly aware,
right,
of it. And instead of letting the children be young people at any age be in charge of how much they eat, but not necessarily the best choosers of what they eat. Although as teens, I think you have to slowly let go of that,
right,
so that they learn to make good choices on their own.
Yeah, there's no way around it. They're going to eat a bag of Doritos every once in a while, or a handful of Doritos every once in a while, no matter how you try to stop it, it's going to happen.
Yeah. I think you don't have to be perfect about it. It's just trying to be in a good place most of the time.
I'll ask you this because, I have a teenager now, and even when she was a preteen, same thing. As soon as she got home from school, first thing she's been, as for as long as I can remember, first thing she does when she gets home from school is get something to eat. Is that good or bad? I mean, what do parents need to know about the after-school snacks?
Yeah, I think it's a great question because schools are great for many things, but
right,
they don't physiologically work with us. I mean, kids aren't allowed to go to the restroom when they need to go most of the time.
Yeah,
you're
right.
They have a very, you know, they're supposed to eat at this time. It's not when they're hungry. So there's stress, and even if it's not under learning, it's some subtle bullying or somebody messing with you or something going on at school. So you come home, you chill, you relax, you're hungry because your day started early and it's been busy, and it's normal to want to eat something. And eating later at night, like many of our dinners, really isn't the healthiest thing to do. It's American, but
right,
it's not the healthiest thing. So I think the after-school snack, but I think the key is to take that word snack and think of it not in terms of a Nabisco, not to pick on a company, but
right,
not in terms of something in a bag or a box, but as part of a meal. So maybe you know they eat after school, but they don't eat dinner, then save dinner from the night before, and then it comes out after school. Or maybe it's not the whole meal, it's just some part of it, whether it's fruit or part of a salad. Sounds boring to some people, but maybe you put it in a wrap, and then it's a wrap, and then it's fun, and they can put salsa on it and other things and make it even with some lunch meat. So there's some things to do, but think of it as part of a meal rather than something you bought in a bag or a box that's traditional snack.
How do we, good Lord, how do we tell our kids, no, we don't want you eating that stuff. I mean, other than just not buying it.
That's the key.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times the kids will say, well, it's hard not to eat it. And we can say, well, did you buy it?
Yeah.
And so, of course, most of the time they didn't. And I think there's important to know that we are setting a bar by what we bring in the house. And sometimes having less in our pantry is helpful, and having more in the refrigerator that's in that fruit and vegetable drawer.
Well, I mean, and like there are some parents that go, I'm so angry at my kid. I can't believe they come home and they're eating Chips Ahoy and Oreos, and they're having ice cream bars, and they're having they didn't buy them.
Yeah.
Somebody,
I think we have
somebody
to,
bought all those.
We have to take that responsibility as parents.
And when is it, we talk about it after school, when is it too late for kids to eat?
Well, I think for any of us, we know physiologically it's best if we don't try to sleep while our gut is digesting a lot of food. So that works against our ability to fall asleep. So if we can avoid eating for an hour and a half to 2 hours before we sleep, I think the only exception is under age two because they sleep so long at night that sometimes that's hard to accomplish. But, you know, kids over one tend to eat mostly in the morning. Big, like if you watch them, most of them want a big breakfast and or a pretty good lunch. But they'll eat very little at dinner, and that's a very healthy way to eat, and it usually promotes better sleep.
So we don't need the, in society, we tend to think that the big meal is the one at night. Like we eat little the rest of the time, but at night it's dinner time, it's supper, it's dinner, it's, you know.
Well, I think there's a reason that, you know, in the old farming tradition, you had an early breakfast, big breakfast, right? And yeah. Dinner was at noon, right? And then a smaller meal in the evening.
Right.
So if we go back to our agricultural roots, actually it's a healthier way to eat.
So stop putting such emphasis on dinner. Do you think that's because, you know, both parents are working and you don't get to eat sometimes. Some people don't eat till 9 o'clock at night. We're just too late. We got to stop that.
Well, to the extent you can, I think we have to all try to look at our lives and see what we can. Can we get up 15 minutes earlier and have a substantial breakfast? Lots of studies and common sense and experience has taught me that the better and bigger our breakfast, the fewer weight issues we have without having to work at it very hard.
You know, I was always big eating at night. I don't eat much for breakfast, and look at me. I'm giant. I'm way too big. So eating patterns number two. When we come back, we got time for news. I got to take a break. But coming up, we're going to talk to Dr. Dolan about one of the most common major health concerns that parents and young people often do not realize is a problem. You guys wait till you hear number three. Find out what it is when we come back on Ask the Expert.
You're listening to Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM, WTAX.
We're going to go somewhere we've never gone before. Everyone, welcome back to Ask the Expert. Breaking new ground. It's time for number three. I warned you. It's time for number three of our four habits to raise healthy kids. My expert is Dr. Virginia Dolan. She's a pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Cocoa Mill. Dr. Dolan, what is number three?
Well, remembering number one was sleep, and number two is the eating patterns in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is actually our bowel habits. So whether you call them BMs, number twos, pooping, whatever you call it in your house,
right?
If the bowels are backed up, the body does not work well. And it can lead to a whole variety of issues that people never piece together.
So most of us don't even consider our bowel movements to be anything but just waste leaving our body.
Well, it is, but it's supposed to leave regularly. And the American normal, it seems to me, from, like I said, a few decades of experience and working with young people and the comments made by their parents as far as their own habits, that they may be something we don't pay enough attention to. We know that there's the obvious chronic belly pain that we see. There's the family fights over someone taking way too long in the bathroom. But we see this go with when people come in with young people that have lost energy, that have emotional changes from temper tantrums to even depression, craving carbs and then gaining weight, all are like the chicken when the egg is not going often enough.
So you said the amount of times you go is some kind of sign?
There's two things. I think most people think of constipation means they didn't go for a week or several days. That's what most people tell me. And that can be, but you can go every day and still be constipated in that you're not adequately getting out everything you're supposed to get out.
Is there some kind of number that we should all be hoping for?
Well, not really. Yes and no. I think if you don't go every day at least once, I haven't seen anyone that I can say is normal who does that, who doesn't have other issues, I should put it that way. Very common to go 1 to 3 times a day, I would say. But it's also we spend a lot of time talking about what the bowel movement looks like, not to get gross in it, but it can vary a little bit. But the question is I'll talk to kids. I'll just say how I usually say it to kids, and they get it. So I'll say, does it look like a hot dog? Does it look like a hard ball? Does it look like a log? Do you worry that it won't flush down? You have to kind of talk about it in those terms. And some people will come in and actually think their kids are having diarrhea, but it's just a loose stool as it's the stool's trying to get out around the constipation. So in your kids, you look for things like, does it take them a long time in the bathroom? Do you plunge your toilet often? A real easy key is to say, when they have gas, does it like chase people out of the room? Is it real foul smelling? Because if there's a lot of stool sitting there waiting to come out, then the gas coming around it will be more foul smelling. Or when you do the laundry, do you see stool leakage in their underwear, which, again, isn't diarrhea usually. It's that they're backed up with stool. And so when the body's trying to get the rest of the stool out, that it leaks around to get it out, and that looks like diarrhea.
By having more stool or being, you know, having it backed up, mm-hmm. is that a weight gain concern, or what is the biggest issue with that?
Well, if they're backed up enough, it can be a couple of pounds just in stool that needs to come out. But as soon as you're not getting it all out, then either one, your body tells you not to be hungry because it's full, or when you do eat, then people often crave carbs. That we see that all the time. And as soon as their constipation is relieved, like, they don't crave carbs as much.
Wow, is that right?
That's
so you're
my
saying
experience.
In your experience, people who are a little bit constipated, people who have something backed up, they'll crave carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why the body does that. That's so odd.
I don't know, because it works against the whole process.
Right. But then when you relieve, you don't crave them as much anymore.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when our schools, again, schools are great. I really admire what our schools do. But it does lead to this day that you don't go when you just need to go.
You got to ask for permission.
A certain time, yes.
Yeah.
It becomes an issue. And then most kids, I've talked to many adults who feel this way about work, just don't want to go, number two, at school or work. And so they'll hold it all day. So the key is, this kind of gets back to that eating pattern,
right,
about being able to eat breakfast and have time to go into the restroom, even if you don't feel like you need to, before you go to work or school. And it can make a huge difference in the day, just like we were talking about. The difference of not eating late at night just is one thing that can make a huge difference in everything else. That taking the time to eat breakfast and then take the time not to run out the door, but there's time to go to the bathroom before you go for the day so that you don't have that all in there to hold. It's when our body is most ready to empty out after we eat breakfast and dinner. Then there's a reflex in our body, gastrocolic reflex, that actually, when we finish swallowing and eating, that makes us want to empty. If we'll just take the time to go. Again, we run these hectic lives, or lives we feel have to be hectic.
Right.
And we don't allow time to eat and then to go.
It is weird because we do it with our pets. You know,
you're right.
We force
we
our
do.
Dog to go out and we walk them until they go. So
absolutely.
Why wouldn't we do that with ourselves? It just came to me when you were speaking. I'm like, holy I've never considered that, you know, in my own life. And to be honest, I'm sure my wife said, we have no idea how many times our daughter goes. Who would know how many times their children go to the bathroom during the day, or if they're doing it the right amount, or if they're not? I mean, it's just something that never comes up.
Right. I think, as a physician, I've been able to get a lot of my patients to open up about it. Once I just show them there's no judgment in it, it's not right or wrong. It's just something to try to dig at to see if there's really something, a pattern to make better. I think when kids are smaller, like grade school, it's even worth rewarding them for sitting there on the toilet after breakfast and dinner for a couple of weeks. And then when they see how much better they feel, you try to help them or wait for them to connect the dots. Oh, when I do that, I feel better. Then it's not just you telling them to do it. They're not either doing it because they've figured out the difference that makes in their life.
It's like we do it when they're potty training, of course, we focus on it. But once they learn how to go, it's just like, okay, it's your business now. So, I mean, what do we do? Do we just bring it up to the dinner table?
Maybe not. How do we
talk to our children about just finding out, hey, is everything coming out all right? Are we, you know, I don't even, for parents, it seems it's an uncomfortable, I you know. It's an uncomfortable conversation to have, especially with your older kids.
I think you can talk about it more as a body process rather than about them as a person, so that you can say, you know, when we know when we eat, that that's when we're supposed to empty out. And but if you get used to holding it all the time, you ignore those signals, then you have to start sitting there. You know, it's a good time to sit and play on an iPad or something.
Right.
Just to say, set the timer for 10 minutes. Don't sit there and try. Just relax.
See if it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
So would it be okay for me to go home or when my daughter gets back from Texas tomorrow to just say, hey, I had Dr. Dolan on, ask the expert, and you guys will not believe what she said. And then have my wife and daughter go, whoa, what did she say? And say, she said that we're supposed to go number two, 1 to 3 times a day, that going 3 times a day is perfectly normal. A lot of people do it. To bring it up just to see if it comes up.
Yeah.
And then say, and if you're not going at least once a day, there could be problems.
I think that's a fair way to put it.
So everyone, you can use this show today, and Dr. Dolan can be your gateway to finding out about the bowel health of your children. I mean, we've got to bring it up to our kids, right?
I think that's the key. But you're right. It's maybe even making it in a funny way is helpful. Comedy can be very useful in parenting.
Yeah. Well, I used to do that in the 90s, and the FCC got mad at me. But I was just trying to teach the kids. Little did they know. That was number three. So far we've got sleep, eating patterns, normal bowel habits. These are three of the four habits to raise healthy kids. When we come back, we're going to learn number four. My expert this week, Dr. Virginia Dolan, a pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Cochamill, and with Memorial Center for Healthy Families. And she's doing great today. I've never heard anyone able to discuss bowel movements in the very mature and adult way we just did. I'm very proud of us. It's Ask the Expert. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM, WTAX.
Hi, we're back, and I'm really enjoying today's episode. Dr. Dolan, you enjoying yourself?
I am. I'm having a ball.
We're talking about the four habits to raise healthy kids. My expert today, Dr. Virginia Dolan, a pediatrician with Memorial Physician Services, Cochamill, and with Memorial Center for Healthy Families, which I love the fact that Memorial is putting that emphasis on healthy families, and you guys are coming up with new approaches, and I think it's fantastic. The four habits to raising healthy kids. Number one was sleep. Number two was eating patterns. Number three was normal bowel habits, and now number four for raising healthy kids. What's number four?
Well, it's about having those coping skills. We, as parents, we all want our kids' lives to be perfect. We don't want them to go through what we've had to go through, but that's not the way life works. So letting them learn along the way in different ages, different things work, how to deal with when things don't go the way that they hoped or that what we would call stress, but just can happen in a lot of different ways. But just know that we prepare them for life. We try to keep bad things from happening. Some things are going to happen, and how to help them learn to cope with it is how I think you become more resilient.
Is it tougher in modern times to cope than it was when I think we're pretty close to the same age, I would think. I hope I'm not insulting you because I'm a lot older or something. I think that we're around the same age. But I'm saying that when we were younger, it seemed like there just weren't as many challenges as there are now. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I'm saying modern society, it seems like people don't cope as well as they used to.
Well, I don't know. It's been brought up a lot, and I suppose maybe it doesn't change anything. It is what it is, but I don't know that it was tons easier. I do appreciate over my 25 years as a pediatrician that compared to when I started, people are much more open to talk about a lot of these things.
Well, maybe that's it, yeah.
And so now we talk about them and we hear about them, and I think a lot was left unsaid in years past. And then some people, through their upbringing or what was their community around them, still developed ways of healthy coping with what was going on. Maybe decades ago, fewer people were divorced, but were those marriages any happier? I don't know. And I think something like anger has been around for a long time. So I think when we know that kids start off with anger, it's temper tantrums. Everybody knows about temper tantrums. It's really their first attempt to try to cope with what's not going their way. They're frustrated with themselves, and they haven't quite learned how to walk yet. And you watch kids who are learning their skills, and they start having a lot of temper tantrums right before they're able to do their next step. And then when they can do that, then they're really happy again for a while, just like all of us. And I think purposefully teaching calming skills, self-calming skill. It's nice to have someone who can calm you down, but it's best when you feel like you're empowered to do it yourself. And that's something you can slowly teach in different ways as they grow up.
So give me the dangers of not – for kids. If kids just swallow it. Like it seems to me when I was younger, we just said – you just said to just swallow it. If you had problems coping. Give me the dangers of not being able to cope when it comes to our children.
Well, that's when we tend to get into a lot of anxiety. So it's things that we haven't dealt with, then we just internalize it. Then that can affect how our bodies work, can promote illness. There's something called epigenetics. So like if we know on our genetic code that we're more prone to cancer or something, that undealt with stress increases the chances that those cancer genes will be expressed. And I think just generally how happy we are, and then that affects how we eat and how we sleep, and it all goes round and round, right?
Are we failures if our children are depressed or anything? I mean, and I can just as a parent, it seems like, oh my God, if there's anything emotionally wrong with my child, I did something wrong.
No, I don't think that's how I would look at it. I think that we have highs and lows, and we're more quick to label things, even in young people, than we were many decades ago. But I think whatever you want to call it, and I don't think it always needs a label, the key is to know that there are ways that we can help empower them to have more self-calming things in their life and their tool belt of what they can do. And we often spend a lot of time talking to kids, and maybe it's physical activity, maybe it's music, maybe it's art, maybe it's deep breathing, maybe it's prayer, maybe it's meditation, but maybe it's laughter, that can be a great self-calming tool. And for them just to realize, one, they can just learn from us as parents and community people, just seeing that when life hits us, how do we react and what are our ways of coping? Do we choose the healthier coping skills or the not so healthy coping skills? And then letting them connect the dots. This is something you learn to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When I think about kids, and I do, I worry about this. I have a 14-year-old and I worry about her and her friends and stuff. Like when it comes to emotional things, when is it that we should worry about our children and seek out someone who's a professional to, if anything else, diagnose and see if there is something going on, if there is a depression, or if we're just overprotective as parents?
I think that's a really good question. I think we spend more time now actually looking for it, even in that annual exam, well-child exam, and we see them once a year. We screen for it. We don't just wait for people to tell us about it. We actually look for it.
But so we're being proactive in dealing with this.
Mm-hmm. But you can also go to your doctor just when you feel like they're not sleeping well, or they're crying more, or they're in their room more. I have people who come, and sometimes we find something, sometimes we don't.
Listen, you guys, Memorial Center for Healthy Families. Thank you, Dr. Dolan. This has been Ask the Expert. Be back next week.
This has been Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX. Brought to you by Memorial Health System. For more information about Memorial Health System, visit choosememorial.org. And join us every Tuesday at 3 for Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX.